Akitra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akitra AI. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. You know, if you're like a lot of us, you probably spend a good chunk of your day looking at screens, using apps, thinking we're in this sort of weightless digital world. Well, today we're going to push back on that idea quite hard, actually. We are diving into a really important book by Vaclav Smil. It's called How the World Really Works. And our goal here is pretty straightforward. Let's maybe stop focusing so much on the digital side of things for a moment and get to grips with the actual physical stuff. The concrete, the chemicals, the energy that makes everything else possible. You know, the things we totally take for granted.
Yeah, and it's more than just interesting, Smil argues. It's, well, urgent. He sees this huge, almost dangerous gap between how most people think the world works, this digital myth, and the hard physics, the material realities that actually support 8 billion of us. And that misunderstanding leads to some really questionable policies, unrealistic expectations, just poor decisions all around.
It really is the ultimate reality check, isn't it? We imagine we live up in the cloud. But forget, the cloud needs massive server farms built with tons of cement and steel, powered by enormous grids, cooled by complex systems. Okay, so let's unpack this. Prepare yourself for a proper look at the invisible foundations holding our modern world together.
Absolutely. But before we get into those foundations, maybe we should talk about our guide here, Vaclav Smil. He's quite a figure, Czech-Canadian scientist, professor emeritus, and genuinely a polymath. He's written something like, what, over 40 books, plus hundreds of papers, and his work covers everything from energy systems, food production, materials, environmental science, the whole lot.
Yeah, and what really makes him stand out, I think, is this relentless focus on numbers, rigorous quantitative analysis. He's famously skeptical, isn't he, of both the sort of breathless tech hype and the doom and gloom predictions. He doesn't seem to start with an agenda. He just asks, okay, what does the data actually show us? Bill Gates is a huge fan, apparently.
Exactly right. His authority comes from that synthesis. He pulls together data from physics, engineering, history, across decades, even centuries. So he's not just saying, oh, we should use this energy source. He's calculating the energy density, the material needs, explaining why past transitions took generations and why, you know, scaling up current renewables faces these massive physical hurdles. It's about the hard realities.
Okay, so let's get into the book's main argument then. Smil basically says, forget this idea that we've dematerialized. That's nonsense. Modern life, our civilization, it's not floating on data. It's built on and utterly dependent on huge energy-hungry physical systems. Systems that consume colossal amounts of raw materials every single day.
Right. And to help us grasp this, he breaks it down into four fundamental pillars. He argues that if you don't understand these four things, you just can't understand how the modern world functions, period.
Okay, what are they?
So first up is energy. He calls it the master resource. And crucially, it's still dominated by fossil fuels, overwhelmingly so. Second, food production. Not farming like you might picture, but a massive industrial process that absolutely relies on those energy inputs. Third, material science. This is the actual physical stuff the world's made of. Steel, cement, plastics, and also ammonia, which is key. And finally, number four is globalization. But not just the economics, the actual physical network, the ships, the planes, the infrastructure that connects it all, which is surprisingly fragile.
Right. And the aim of looking at all this, as you said, is to get to what Smil calls rational comprehension. It's about being realistic, isn't it? Ditching the wishful thinking, whether it's utopian or apocalyptic, and just facing the complexity.
Doing the math.
Doing the math, exactly. Understanding the constraints we actually operate under. All right, let's dig into that first pillar then, energy. This is where it gets really eye-opening for a lot of people, I think, because Smil hammers home this point about the pace of change. Energy transitions, he shows historically, take decades, usually centuries, not just a few years like we often hear promised. Why? Why so slow?
Well, it boils down to two really stubborn physical facts, energy density and sheer scale. Fossil fuels are just incredibly concentrated energy sources. Think about a tank of gasoline versus the weight and volume of batteries you'd need to get the same range in a car, or even more dramatically, jet fuel for planes.
Yeah, the density difference is huge.
It's enormous.
Yes.
And then there's the scale. Replacing our current fossil fuel infrastructure isn't just about swapping out power plants. If you want to replace, say, one big gas-fired power station with wind or solar, you need vast areas of land. You need incredible amounts of materials, copper, steel, concrete, rare earths, not just for the turbines or panels, but for the grid upgrades, the storage, everything. The sheer physical scale of replacing dense energy sources with more diffuse ones is, well, it's staggering. And building also takes energy, mostly fossil fuel energy right now.
Yeah.
That slows things down massively.
That scale aspect is just mind-bending when you really think about it. Okay, so if energy is pillar one, the next pillar, food, shows how.
Artificial, maybe.
Or current abundances. Smell has this incredibly provocative line. Modern agriculture is essentially the conversion of fossil fuels into food. How does that work?
It's pretty sobering when you dive into it. Basically, the natural nitrogen cycle of the Earth can only sustain so many people. Maybe, Smell estimates, 3 or 4 billion tops. The only reason we can feed the 8 billion people alive today, yeah, well, maybe half of them, is because we can produce synthetic nitrogen fertilizer on an industrial scale.
Right. This is the Haber-Bosch process you hear about, the chemical reaction.
Precisely. And Smeal doesn't mince words. He calls it possibly the most important invention of the 20th century. It literally prevented mass starvation for billions. But here's the catch, the critical link. Producing that ammonia fertilizer requires hydrogen. And almost all of that hydrogen globally is currently produced using natural gas, a fossil fuel.
Wow.
Yeah. So we use natural gas to make fertilizer, we use diesel for the tractors and transport, we use energy to process and package the food. Essentially, a huge portion of the calories we all consume has fossil fuels, especially natural gas, embedded right at the start of the chain.
I remember reading that the gas-to-grain connection, it just completely changes how you think about food security, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which leads us neatly into the third pillar, materials. We like to think our world is built on data or code, but Smil reminds us, no, it's built on literal stuff, massive quantities of physical material.
Absolutely. And again, the scale is almost unimaginable, billions upon billions of tons every year. He focuses on four materials he calls the pillars of modern civilization, basically indispensable, with no viable substitutes at the necessary scale right now. Those are ammonia, which we just discussed for fertilizer, but it's also crucial for plastics and explosives, steel, cement, and plastics.
And the challenge here, particularly for decarbonization, gets really tricky, right? For steel and cement, it's not just about finding cleaner energy to make them. The chemistry itself is a problem.
Exactly. That's a crucial point Smil makes. Take steel. Making steel from iron ore needs coking coal, not just for heat, but chemically. The carbon in the coal acts as a reducing agent. It strips the oxygen atoms away from the iron oxide ore. You can't just swap in electricity for that part of the process easily. There are experimental methods, but scale is a huge issue.
Okay, so it's fundamental chemistry. And cement?
Similar issue. Cement is the most widely used man-made material on Earth by mass, think concrete everywhere. Making it involves heating limestone calcium carbonate very intensely. This process, called calcination, inherently releases huge amounts of CO2 directly from the limestone itself. It's not just the fuel you burn, the rock itself gives off CO2.
So even if you use carbon-free heat, you'd still have massive CO2 emissions from the chemical reaction.
That's the problem. It shows just how deeply embedded these processes and their carbon footprints are in the very fabric of our built world.
And then, of course, plastics. Ubiquitous. Derived almost entirely from oil and natural gas feedstocks, essential for everything from packaging to medical devices to car parts.
These four materials, ammonia, steel, cement, plastics, they're the physical reality of modern life. Billions of tons of them.
Right. Which brings us to pillar four, globalization, which, again, Smell emphasizes isn't some abstract economic concept. It's intensely physical.
It absolutely is. Think giant container ships, bulk carriers hauling ore and grain, fleets of aircraft, all running overwhelmingly on heavy fuel oil or jet fuel. Because, again, that energy density is king for moving heavy things long distances. The whole global trade system floats on fossil fuels, literally.
And looking at that incredibly complex, interconnected system, what makes it so vulnerable? Beyond, you know, the occasional ship getting stuck in the Suez Canal, which we saw can cause chaos.
Well, it's that very complexity and the tight coupling. We've optimized global supply chains for maximum efficiency, often just-in-time delivery, which means there's very little slack in the system. So any disruption, whether it's a pandemic, a port strike, a cyber attack on logistics, conflict in a key shipping lane like the Strait of Hormuz, even a major solar flare taking out grids, it doesn't just cause a local problem. The effects can cascade globally, almost instantly, because everything depends on everything else running smoothly. Our efficiency creates inherent fragility.
Okay, that's a sobering tour of the four pillars. So stepping back, what are the big overarching themes or messages we should take away from Smil's analysis? What does it all add up to?
I think there are three core messages that really stand out. Theme one, the absolute primacy of the material world. Samils is relentless on this point, cutting through that dematerialization myth. Your smartphone, your Zoom calls, your online shopping, it all rests on a vast hidden base of mines, factories, power plants, concrete, steel, plastic, and massive electricity flows. We have to start by acknowledging that physical reality.
Yeah, get our heads out of the cloud, so to speak, and look at the ground it's built on. Okay, theme two.
Theme two. The deeply embedded fossil fuel foundation.
Right.
It's not just about the gasoline in our cars or the natural gas heating our homes.
Mm-hmm.
Fossil fuels are chemically essential feedstocks for making fertilizer, food, and plastics. They're chemically essential for making steel. They provide the high heat needed for cement. This dependency isn't superficial, it's structural. It's in the very materials and processes of modern life. And that means it can't be changed quickly or easily. It demands a certain sobriety.
Sobriety is a good word for it. And the third theme.
Theme three, the crucial importance of scale and quantitative thinking. This might be Smale's biggest contribution, really. He forces us to do the math. He argues that grand goals, lofty visions for the future, they're basically meaningless unless you ground them in the quantitative realities of now.
Yeah.
How many billions of tons of steel do we need? How much energy does that take today? How long did previous transitions actually take? Asking those questions forces realism over ideology or wishful thinking. It's about understanding the sheer scale of the systems we're dealing with.
Yeah, his work is definitely full of those kinds of memorable, almost blunt statements that stick with you because they just feel grounded, in fact.
Oh, absolutely. Like that core statement. We are a fossil-fueled civilization whose technical and scientific advances, quality of life, and prosperity rest on the combustion of huge quantities of fossil carbon. It just lays bare the depth of that dependency. Our prosperity isn't magic. It's chemistry and energy conversion, largely from carbon.
And the one about transitions always gets me. Energy transitions take centuries, not decades. That puts all the promises of rapid change into a very different historical perspective, doesn't it?
It really does. It's a vital reality check against hype.
And we keep coming back to it, but it's so central. Modern agriculture is the conversion of fossil fuels into food, linking natural gas to the bread on your table. That's profound.
It underpins our very existence at current population levels.
And finally, his kind of summary statement for the whole book's purpose, we must understand how the world really works before we can hope to change it effectively.
Yeah, knowledge first. Understand the system, its constraints, its interdependencies. Then you can talk about realistic pathways for change.
So thinking about the listener, how can you take this rational comprehension Smil advocates for and actually apply it? How does it make you a better informed citizen, for instance?
Well, first and foremost, I think it gives you a powerful framework for informed citizenship and media literacy. When you hear about a new green revolution technology or a politician promising a super fast transition, you can apply Smil's questions. Okay, what's the scale required to make a real difference globally? What materials does this need? How much steel, concrete, copper, lithium? Where do they come from? What's the energy cost of building this new infrastructure itself? Asking those quantitative material questions helps you cut through the noise and assess feasibility. It fosters a healthy skepticism.
That's really practical. And on a more personal level.
On a personal level, I think it fosters a much deeper appreciation for the invisible systems that support our daily lives. The next time you turn on the tap, flick a light switch, buy something wrapped in plastic, or eat a meal, maybe take just a second to think about the incredible chain of mining, chemistry, engineering, manufacturing, logistics, and energy that had to happen for that simple act to be possible. It shifts your perspective from just consuming to understanding the immense embedded energy and complexity behind it all. It's quite humbling, actually.
Humbling is right. It moves you from just taking it all for granted.
Exactly. And that leads to the third application, promoting long-term thinking. If Smil is right that these major transitions in energy and materials are multi-generational tasks, then the focus has to shift away from just looking for quick fixes or silver bullets and towards advocating for and supporting the sustained, difficult, often unglamorous engineering and industrial work that needs to happen over decades. Progress needs to be measured in tons of steel produced differently or gigawatt hours from new sources reliably integrated, not just in press releases.
That makes sense. For me, thinking back through it, the thing that really hit home, the real aha moment, was understanding those chemical roadblocks in steel and especially cement production. The fact that CO2 comes directly from the limestone in cement making, regardless of the fuel source, that just shows how fundamentally carbon is baked into the physical structure of our world. It makes the challenge feel incredibly concrete, pardon the pun.
Yeah, that's a powerful example of the depth of the challenge. For me, I think it was the sheer fragility that comes with our success, realizing that feeding roughly half the world's population depends almost entirely on one specific industrial chemical process, Haber-Bosch, and its reliance on natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
It just highlights how our massive, complex civilization is balanced on these very specific energy-intensive foundations. It's an incredible achievement, but also precarious. So the rational optimism Smil talks about isn't about denying the problems. It's about facing that reliance squarely, understanding the constraints, and then having faith in our ability over the long haul, to innovate and manage these systems responsibly. It requires realism, not just hope.
A call for realism and sustained effort. A powerful message. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.